our average loan amount is about $20 million now. We'll probably fund anywhere between $900 million and $1.2 billion this year. So $40 million of financing out of a $50 million project, pretty attractive. So we call ourselves a government adjacent lending consortium. We get to pair these programs together. So it's not uncommon for us to use a $25 million USDA loan, which is generally the cap for for-profits, and pair that with a $15 million PACE loan and call it $10 million of equity thereafter.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, legal, or investment advice. Please consult a professional advisor before making any decision based on what you hear on the show. Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Seidensticker, and welcome to another episode of Distress to Success, where we talk with professionals who are helping reinvent blighted communities in a profitable way. With me today, I was lucky enough to snag some time from Jordan Blanchard. He's the co-founder of Excalibur Rural Capital, and I won't steal all your thunder, Jordan, but just to preview its unique lending product, really focusing on rural developers, commercial developers especially, as well as communities, and utilizing that capital and building out those rural communities. So welcome, Jordan. Thanks for hopping on.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate the ability to talk about what we do.
Well, I'm excited to talk more about that. I guess before we dive into Excalibur in a little more detail, I always love to learn a bit about our guests, you know, kind of history, how you got to the success that you obviously have today. Can you fill us in on some of your background and your journey along the way and how you got here?
Sure. So I'm a 35-year banking veteran, and you can tell by the gray hairs in my beard, but most of that time has been spent facilitating government guaranteed loans. So early in my career, that was small business administration loans. And then for the last 10 years, that has been what are called U.S. Department of Agriculture 1RD loan programs. And many people, when they first hear USDA, they think that we make farm loans. But the USDA, in addition to making farm loans, they have special programs set up for commercial, municipal. We do both of those, as well as multifamily and even residential. So my focus is on the commercial and municipal under the 1RD loan programs.
Got it. So I guess tell us a little bit more about how you ended up landing in doing what Excalibur. Obviously, you were doing it for a bank and then, you know, decided to go do that private, or what does that look like?
Yeah, no, good question. I'm a late blooming entrepreneur. Let's put it that way. So, you know, one of the hard things about starting your own lending company is coming up with the capital. So generally, if you were a lender, you work for a bank. But starting in, well, as soon as I discovered USDA 1RD lending, it dawned on me that this is something that you could do privately. It's very hard to do SBA privately because the Small Business Administration has a lot of restrictions on who can be a lender. The USDA was more open to the concept of non-bank lenders. And so then it just became necessary to go ahead and find the capital and put the infrastructure together. So I was fortunate enough to partner with Chris Callahan, who formed Excalibur Capital. Excalibur Capital, you could think of it as the parent company or the sister company to Excalibur Rural Capital. Chris has a long background on Wall Street, and he formed that entity to make housing and urban development loans. So on one side, we have a HUD license. On the other side, we have a USDA license. Combined our efforts, Chris brought the capital. I brought the IP as well as most of the staff. So we're up to direct employees now, about 30 plus another 15 or 20 that our shared resources with Excalibur Capital. We've been in business now for about 5 years. We started in 2021. And, you know, I'm 59 right now, but I don't see any slowing down. Like I said, I was a late blooming entrepreneur. I don't see any reason why we can't do this for another 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Well, it's never too late to hop on the entrepreneur train. That's for right. Sure. That's awesome. Well, yeah, you certainly found a niche that I know I did not even know existed before talking to you, Jordan. But I think I'll share some of the loose things that I'm knowledgeable of, right? And then maybe you can, you know, dive into some more specifics on exactly the types of things that Caliber Rural has helped with. So I'm assuming, right, to qualify for these, it's got to be a census tract that is designated as a rural census tract, and then it, or is there anything like that?
No, you're right on. So the USDA has a mapping program. So if you searched USDA 1RD loan eligibility, you could find it. You enter your address. In some cases, if it's going to be new construction, it's hard to enter an address. You just go to Google Maps, you find the next closest address and plug it in. And then you'll see a pictorial representation of whether or not your project qualifies. In essence, it's a town of 50,000 or less based upon the last census that's not contiguous with a more populated area. So you can't have a town of 40,000 next to Los Angeles and have it qualify. There has to be some buffer between the town that you're looking to lend in and the next population center. And the town you're looking to lend in needs to be 50,000 or less.
Got it. Got it. And I think it's important to maybe tell listeners of what you're thinking as far as rural in your head is probably not the right picture to paint. I mean, obviously, I think farmland, small towns, in the middle of nowhere, right, obviously would qualify, but there are other areas, like you said, it's 50,000 or more, which is a pretty significant town. Quite frankly, I come from the from Montana, where a 50,000 person city is like, I think there's maybe three or four of those, and the rest of the state probably would qualify for that. So, you know, don't necessarily discredit a project because you think it's around a populous area, right? It depends on when the next last census tract was, right? And of that particular census tract, how close it is to a major metro area. So for the listeners out there, you can certainly look into this and don't discredit it just because you're thinking like small town, middle of nowhere. It's more than that for sure. So I guess maybe it would help to kind of dive into a recent project or two, right, Jordan, that you've helped with. I don't know if you can share like exact towns or addresses or anything like that, but just kind of high level, the types of projects that folks have come to you that have been great, you know, I say winners or able to work with them through completion.
Sure. So to begin with, I'd like to highlight that there's really two halves to our lending business, or two halves to the USDA 1RD program. So the first half is going to be for profit, and that's kind of the folks that you can think about or that you interact with most likely. But the other half is municipal cities, water districts, fire districts, what have you. So we have lots and lots of examples. First of all, I would say that tourism is our number one industry. And if you think about it, if it's a small town that is looking to grow, you need to have hospitality, you need to have restaurants, things like that. So we do a lot of tourism-related business. On the municipal side, we have done things like water district financing. So what does that look like? It could be a new water tank. It could be whatever equipment the water district may need. It could be irrigation lines, sewer, anything of the sort. Fire districts, we've financed a number of fire trucks for fire districts. Why would they want to go with us versus somebody else? In both cases, in those situations, we can offer much longer terms, actually up to 40 years. Back on the for-profit, it could be really any legitimate business except for maybe a dozen carve-outs that the USDA has given. So for example, we financed a metals recycler in Texas. So they buy recycled metals from iPhones and things like that, and they extract the rare earth metals, which is a good time for that. We did a fracking sand logistics transportation point in South Dakota. We've done numerous hospitality. Back on the muni side or nonprofit side, we've done hotels. We did a rural hospital in Oxford, Mississippi. We did another one in Tennessee. We just closed on a manufacturing plant down in Florida, and they're going to manufacture a special type of horse food. But the building itself is just a concrete tilt up like any other manufacturing building. That was unique because we were able to blend in new market tax credits and commercial PACE, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later. So some pretty complicated financing going on, and these are for larger deals. Our average loan amount is about $20 million now.
Got it. Now, are they, so $20 million, and are they
always like, I'll say ground up construction, or are they like, you know, remodel into different use case of an existing structure, you know, maybe historical or not? Can it be just the business, right, within a structure, like all of the above, or like what, like just what are the, anyway, I'll stop there. What's that?
Really good questions. So first of all, for use of funds, it's going to be purchase, refinance, light tenant improvements, kind of what you just talked about, or ground up construction. We do mostly ground up. And you might say, well, why is that? And it's because USDA loans are typically have a higher upfront cost and they take longer than a conventional loan. So there has to be some motivation for a client to want to go through the process and pay the fees. Access to large construction financing in rural locations, often based upon projections, that's not easy to get. So, you know, that's why we have so much ground up construction that gravitates to us. Your other question was really good, because this is a misconception of people about, well, I want to go buy that business over there, and you know, it's trading at 5x, you know, net revenue, and there's going to be a lot of goodwill. The USDA is a very poor fit for that. So USDA needs hard collateral, and we are limited to a specific advance rate. It might be 75 or 80% on real estate. It might be 60 or 70% on equipment, but everything we do has to be collateralized by physical plant or equipment. So anything that's goodwill related, business acquisitions, that's better off with the Small Business Administration programs, which they can facilitate.
Got it. So what are the, I'm assuming there's, you know, big advantages to the cost of capital. Like, what are the terms? You mentioned 40 years. What are the terms, you know, look like, right? And obviously today's market might be different than 5 years from now, and we're in 2026, but what are the terms look like now?
Sure. Yeah. So I forgot to mention that for profits, we're limited generally to 30 years, not 40. So 40 we can do for nonprofits and munis. And then we're also limited by the effective life of the collateral. So if we're financing equipment and the equipment's going to last 15 years, that's going to be our maximum term. If it's real estate, it could be 30 years. So I forgot to mention that, but the structure that we will generally offer for a construction deal is up to 2 years interest only, with a built-in interest reserve that makes the payments during the construction period, followed by 25 to 30 years fully amortizing, depending upon the blend of real estate to equipment. So that talks about the term. These loans are all fully amortizing, so there's no balloon payments that somebody has to worry about at year 5 or year 7, which is common for conventional banks. As far as the rates go, it depends upon the credit strength. So a town is going to be generally a better credit risk than would a for-profit developer. So they're going to see lower yields, lower rates than would the for-profit. So I would say our spreads over treasury or something like 2.5% for a town or a muni or a fire district, and then ranging up to say 3.5, maybe 4, depending upon the project type and the credit background of the applicant. So it's very much market-based pricing. Depending upon how strong your project is, that's going to dictate the pricing. The USDA then does also have certain add-on fees, which is common with government guaranteed loan programs. So for the for-profits, it's generally 0.44%, and then it ranges, it's anywhere from 0 to you know, something higher than that for the nonprofits. So your all-in cost of funding is 300 over treasury to 400, 450.
Got it. Well, yeah, I'd say those are amazing rates compared to other options, right, for most rural commercial developers, for sure. I know we talked at the beginning or before the episode of right, Excalibur really focuses on the commercial, you know, side, but that you either partner or work with, you know, similar partners that lend in the residential space. So what does that structure look like?
Yeah, not so much residential. So what I was noting is that USDA has a program for residential, but We don't do anything in our world that's residential. As far as multifamily, we do our companies. We have a kind of a group of affiliated companies do offer a lot of multifamily financing. So we can do anything from call it bridge to HUD or repositioning or even ground up construction all the way up to a HUD takeout loan. And folks gravitate to the HUD takeout loan because it has superior terms, long-term fixed rates that are below market, but it has to be stabilized. So our companies will step in, provide the funding to get the property stabilized, rehabilitated, leased up, so that the client can then gravitate into a HUD loan.
Got it. And again, they need to be in those rural census tracts, same.
No, those have different requirements. So only Excalibur Rural Capital focusing on the commercial and the muni, that needs to be rural because we're using USDA loan guarantees.
Okay.
HUD has no rural requirement, so it could be anywhere.
So on the multifamily, you know, product that you guys partner with, that does not need to be a rural census.
That's right.
Got it. Okay. Very interesting. Well, I guess before we kind of move into, you know, words of advice to your younger self, Jordan, is there anything else about Excalibur that you want the audience to definitely know or keep in mind?
Yeah. I mean, I've focused on two of our primary companies, but we do have a number of affiliates. We're a group of companies. So if you think about, you know, Ares or Apollo or something like that, we've created companies that focus on specific niches, as you mentioned before. I'd say the commonality is some sort of government interaction. So we call ourselves a government adjacent lending consortium. So again, in my case, I use the U.S. Department of Agriculture. One of our affiliates uses HUD. We have another that does commercial PACE loans, and commercial PACE is a really exciting opportunity for developers. We have another affiliate that focuses on, it's called EB-5, immigration funding. So the things that we do are government adjacent. We'll probably fund anywhere between $900 million and $1.2 billion this year. And what's really fun in our world is we get to pair these programs together. So it's not uncommon for us to use a $25 million USDA loan, which is generally the cap for for-profits, and pair that with a $15 million PACE loan and call it $10 million of equity thereafter. So $40 million of financing out of a $50 million project, pretty attractive. So having all of those lending companies in-house and all those products in-house really makes it a compelling offer to any developer.
Definitely. Well, fascinating. And I definitely have many more questions than I'm sure the audience does. I'm going to hold off on asking for your contact information to the very end so people listen. But one of my other favorite questions, Jordan, is you know, really boils down to what kind of words of advice would you give your younger self, if there are any, to help, you know, you've obviously found success, right? And if you're like me or most entrepreneurs, right, there are some, you know, pain points along the way. Any words of advice you'd give your younger self that would help avoid those pain points and get you to your success even faster?
Sure. I can think of a couple on the personal side and the major one on the business side. So on the personal side, get up early. You know, I get up at 4:30 every morning, and it's amazing how many more productive hours I have versus, you know, the younger me would sleep in later. The other thing I wish I would have done is develop a workout routine, a solid workout routine much earlier in my life. I was always active, but I didn't have a solid workout routine like I do now. And as we get older, that's ever more critical. On the business side, collaboration. I was too much of an individualist. I was too competitive versus trying to find ways to collaborate with others, even our competitors. You can do that. And I wish that I would have had that mindset as a younger person.
Oh, those are all very appropriate. They're ringing with me immensely. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Really the last, you know, question or segment, which has nothing to do, could have nothing to do with what we talked about, Jordan, I call carve outs, and I totally stole this segment from another podcast I listened to, but any piece of wisdom, gadget you bought, book you read that that you would, you know, share with the audience, you think they would benefit? I'll give you a few moments to think about it. And I'll share mine first. But my carve out this episode is I'm actually listening to a book right now called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And it kind of goes through some mental agreements you can make with yourself that might change. You mentioned mindset. And I think these are four agreements that sound very difficult, or I should say sound easy to implement, but probably difficult in practice. And hopefully I've sparked enough interest for you all to go Google the book. Definitely highly recommend downloading and listening to it. It's definitely been an eye-opening reading or listening experience in my case. I'm a Audible book listener, but there's my carve out, I guess, Jordan. Hopefully I give you enough time to kind of think about something from your end.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'd like to say is I'm a avid reader, avid Audible listener, podcast listener. So love being on your podcast, Brian, because I am such a consumer of podcasts. But in my scenario, I'll probably have a half a dozen books going at a time. And it depends upon what I'm in the mood for. It might be nutrition. I love focusing on nutrition. It might be meditation. It might be business. I'd say two of my current favorite books. You only asked for one. I'm going to give you two. The first one is Second Brain. Your Second Brain, which it talks about in this world of digital overload, how to take, synthesize, and organize information. And I'm having just a wonderful time with that. And because of the age of AI, the tools have never been better. So that just excites me every day. Probably my favorite current book is The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. I had never heard of Naval, but he's, you know, on the Tim Ferriss podcast show a lot. It's not one I normally listen to, but I've just found it to be fascinating. So the format of the book and Audible is much better than Kindle or the hard copy, because the author basically, it's not quite an autobiography, but the author took all of the tweets and everything else that Naval had done publicly, synthesized it, worked with Naval to make sure he had the right interpretation. And at the end of every chapter, there's actually an interview and a dialogue back and forth. The reason I like that book is he's extremely successful, but he touches on kind of financial advice, life advice, career advice. And when you listen to him, I'm like, man, that guy really knows what he's talking about. I've really extracted just a ton of value from that book.
That's awesome. What's the name of it again? Almanac of?
Of Naval Ravikant.
Naval Ravikant. Awesome. Awesome. Well, all of that stuff will be in the show notes below. I guess before we head our separate ways, Jordan, how if so, folks want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Two ways. So one is email, Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, B as in Blanchard, Jordan B, at xrcusda.com. Stands for Excalibur Real Capital, USDA.com. And then we are very much into LinkedIn. So there's my own personal LinkedIn email, or excuse me, LinkedIn profile, Jordan Blanchard. And then Excalibur Real Capital also has its own LinkedIn profile. And if folks go there, they will see case studies of projects that we have funded in the past. It's very informative.
Excellent. Excellent. When everybody listening, you can find that information in the show notes below as well. Jordan, I immensely appreciate you hopping on and sharing your knowledge with me as well as the listeners. I am sure listeners are mind blown as much as I am as far as the opportunities that you guys, you know, bring to the table with rural development. And thanks again for joining us.
Brian, thank you for having me. Really appreciated it.
Well, for all your listeners, good luck out there, and we'll catch you next time.